Good morning, Gamecock fans. Today's Thursday, January 29th, the year of our Lord 2025, and this is Coffee with JC Sherbert. Hope you're all doing well today. Hope Gamecock basketball last night. You probably did get some sleep. Was not much of a game. I was talking to Matt Anderson. Matt did a real nice preview last night, something new we're trying on the Chief Sports Network. You can look at it on our YouTube channel. Really good stuff. So I was working with him and his keys to the game. And, you know, Matt knows basketball well. You can hear him on the Late Night Gamecock show, and he's in with us on Fridays on the show. And a really nice preview. And I was working on something and kind of had the game in the background and went away from it for a little while. Because sometimes it's better if I don't watch because they tend to play better. Not last night. I got a text from Matt before I checked the score and watched it on out. And it was, he was like, well, the keys to this game are none of them happened. 95-48 Florida defeats South Carolina at home. That's just a horrific loss. Lamont Paris's post game, he just basically said they didn't have any fight in them. You know, it's one of those things where, you know, I griped about the late tip-off, but Florida's in the Eastern time zone, too. I mean, you know, you got to match that. I don't think that was a reason. I think this team wilts sometimes, and as Paris said, the aggression's there, and guys just flat-out don't show up. You know, there's going to be a lot of talk about basketball and how to fix it. This is a 7-33 record now in the last 40 games against Power League opponents. Bill Gunner from 107.5, my good friend Wild Bill, he had a tweet today or last night that mentioned Carolina's lost 22 of 26 SEC games. 9 of those have been by 20 or more. So they're not just losing. They're losing in spectacular fashion. Right now, this is rock bottom. It's been bad through the years, folks. It hadn't been this bad where they're just the losses are just piling. I mean, it's historic, probably. I need to go back and look. I don't know that they've been through this stretch of bad, with the record. I don't know that they've been through this kind of stretch. I mean, I'm trying to think of some of the teams that, you know, maybe didn't do as well. Through the years, Fogler had an 8-21, but he got back to 15-17 competitive the next year. Odom, you know, Darren Horn, maybe in his era, I think his worst team was his last one, 10-21. But man, I mean, guys, this is bad record wise, and it stinks because yet again, you have a promising season, a really good season, tied the school record for wins. And 2 years later, you're sitting with 33 losses in 40 games against teams that matter. You know, I maybe with a new athletic director, new athletics administration, they have solutions for basketball. But we're going to talk about that. I'm not going to sit here and talk about that on coffee all day. I just wanted to mention that on the morning show later today. Paul Maneri, wish we had the head baseball coach at Carolina under better circumstances, because yesterday the potential Friday night starter, Jake McCoy, lefty, you know him, it was announced, the news was broken, he has to have Tommy John surgery. So he's out for the year, so Coach Maneri can fill you in on maybe where they go from here from a pitching standpoint. That's a big blow just because he has really good stuff. You know, as Jamie mentioned, if you throw 98 miles per hour from the left side, that's good stuff in the sport of baseball. Opening day's right around the corner, February 13th, so about a couple of weeks, 2 weeks, we'll have from tomorrow. Opening day at Founders Park against the Norse of Northern Kentucky, home of former Gamecock basketball coach Darren Horn, who's the men's basketball coach there now. But yeah. So we'll have a good conversation with him. Mike Morgan is in the co-host on the show. It's Alex Jones, Gamecock Smorgasbord. So we always look forward to that. We got to find something weird to trip him up with today. So those are the morning announcements. We're going to talk today about a position that, you know, sometimes, you know, when we go through a football off season. And I think this off season, we're so far, and gosh, it's only January 29th. It's a long, it's one of the reasons I keep saying, I hope Gamecock baseball has a decent year. Just so, I mean, number one, South Carolina's on quite a negative heater in men's sports right now, that people care about. And, all you out there, I bless your souls for sticking with this, what's going on right now. We'll all be stronger for it, we say, but I know everybody's just sick of losing. Back to back to back to back disappointment, nothing but disappointment lately. And that's surprising, like I said, because this hadn't been this way. There's been bad seasons in different sports here and there, but usually one of the other sports has a good year and everybody kind of feels decent. Not recently, man. I mean, this is a trying time for Gamecock men's athletics. And it kind of stinks because it's coincided with the NIL and transfer portal era. And I think that in at least two of the three sports, the transfer portal's been pretty positive as far as getting players in and things like that. And I think NIL's competitive and doing well. I mean, you don't really see it in recruiting. The Gamecocks just getting totally outbid and outclassed, and then those players that get paid all that money coming in and damaging them. At least in let me just clarify this, at least in football. Basketball last year, maybe that was the reason, but they got more. And I mean, you kind of expect a little more this year. And then baseball, it's Mainieri's first year. He inherited a lot of players that, and then recruited some and spent some, and that just didn't work out. But, this year they've reloaded and they had more resources to go acquire players. So you look at that and you trace that, and it doesn't make any sense. It's not because of the new era. If you look at it on its face, so what's happening? I don't know. Yeah, I think football, we can figure it out. It was a disastrous decision to promote Mike Shula on offense. It blew up in everybody's face, including mine, because I think everybody, Shane Beamer, everybody just thought they'd keep on keeping on, but it didn't happen that way. Basketball, I don't know how you have a shooting a team that has to shoot to win that can't shoot. I mean, it took 20-something% last night. Are you kidding me? Against that bunch from Florida? And then baseball will find out. So that's one of the reasons I'm hoping that they have a good baseball season. But it's football time here on Coffee. I'm sorry. I just had to get that off my chest because I think sometimes when you're in my business, losing sucks because there's massive overreaction to it. And they lose one game or lose one player, it's kind of. So you get a little defensive, not necessarily defending what happened, but defending the big picture. Me now, I'm just empathetic. I just feel bad for everybody. It's sad. It's sad. And there's no excuse for it. Not across the board. One sport, men's basketball's had bad seasons. Men's basketball, hasn't been this bad. And it's been a dramatic fall from where it all was 2 years ago. So once again, no capitalization. I mean, you've got a program that's gone to a Final Four and then never got back. You had a program that tied that team's record for wins, almost won the SEC, and then has not only not gotten back, they're staring down the barrel of another bottom three, bottom SEC finish. I mean, if LSU could easily beat them on Saturday, and that's that. So, I mean, baseball's never had anything like what happened last year since they've been in the SEC. Unbelievable. So, and we can get into all the why and all that. We'll talk more about that on the show. So, sorry. I'm like Joan Rivers. Gonna do the show now. Gonna do the show now. Some of you have no idea what the hell I was just talking about. But anyway, today we're gonna talk about a position that Maybe we don't. I don't know. You know, when you go through an off season, and this is where I got sidetracked earlier. Haven't heard as much. You know, like last off season, high expectations. Obviously, everybody's worried about the D line. People were concerned about the O line, the line. You know, the players they lost on defense. Boy, that turned out to be college football off seasons, right? But sometimes we don't. If there's a position where there's a lot of good players or guys we think are good, we don't talk about it as much, but we're going to talk about that today, and that's the wide receivers. I think that of all the positions on the field outside of quarterback, the hiring of Kendall Briles is probably a godsend, or definitely a godsend for the wide receivers. You know, this group, when you started listing the people you felt sorry for, with the way the offense was approached last year, for lack of a better term, the receivers come at the top. I mean, and I felt bad for them. The only SEC win they had against Kentucky, I felt bad for them because Lenora Sellers only attempted 14 passes. And Kentucky at that time had one of the worst pass defenses, or the worst pass defense in the league. So that would have been a time to get it out. And I think of those 11 completions, five or six went to tight ends. I mean, you can't, you know, you got players, but you can't, especially when you had a young room like that, those guys need to get out there and catch passes and get opportunities. Now, that said, you always do what you have to do to win the game. And if you think the best way to win the game, right or wrong, is to line up and run it however many times they did on that last drive and not throw a pass, then more power to you. Sometimes you have to do that. I didn't believe that was, I mean, it was fine. They won by 22 points and beat Kentucky yet again, but and they don't have to deal with Mark Stoops anymore. So Mark Stoops, as good as he was against Carolina to begin with, he went out a loser of four straight against the Gamecocks. But you know, I kind of thought, like, well, you know, that was an example of disappointment within a win. You know, and they had some games they chunked in around. The Missouri game, all they could do was throw. But it didn't lead to many opportunities for these guys. So when you talk about returning production, you know, you got to kind of look at it last year and say, well, you know, they didn't really throw it. There's a lot of games they didn't throw it. They had very many attempts. Some of those were games where they called them, but they couldn't get them off. I mean, it was just a mess. And the numbers play that out. But that said, this is a different system that's going to get the ball in their hands. And rightfully so, because there is a lot of raw talent in this room that we can kind of look at. And the other thing that I think was smart that they did during the transfer portal was, when you look at it, okay, so one of the things that happened last year, you had the four returning receivers, the guys with experience. Mazio Bennett obviously had a down year, was not the same as he was, and didn't get as many opportunities as he did in 2024 as a true freshman when he led the team in receptions. Nick Harbor got better. Vandrevious Jacobs got a lot better. He's gone now. Jared Brown disappeared for stretches, then comes back and has a critical fumble against Clemson. You know, so those four really hit at about a 50% clip. So then where do you go? Well, outside of those guys, it's mostly freshmen. You know, Donovan Murph, Brian Rowe, who's now at UCLA, you know, Jaden Sellers towards the back half of the year was probably their most consistent receiver. So, you know, it was kind of one of those where it was top heavy, bottom heavy, as far as age. And we talked about getting older and all that good stuff. And I think South Carolina's portal additions, you know, you look at it, and Jaden Gibson's going into his fifth year. Nitro Tuggle has SEC experience. So does Gibson. Gibson was at Oklahoma, obviously. Was at Purdue last year and was productive. He's a junior. He's going into his third year. DJ Black, fifth year addition from UCF, originally from Chapman, coming back to Carolina. Charlie Mullaly from Holy Cross is going into his fourth year. So these are all older guys that you add to that core of young players, which, you know, South Carolina, I think, signed five, six. Well, all but Brian Rowe are still there. That's good. I think, you know, when they signed all these guys, I think a lot of us were like, well, there'll be a couple that hit the portal, and there was. But and Brian Rowe and Vandrevious Jacobs are really good players. So that stinks that South Carolina lost them. But can they replace them? Yes. There's plenty of guys that are possible to replace them. So I do think getting some older guys in the room is good because it does still skew young. 8 of the 14 players, scholarship players, plus Jackson Rep, who I'm counting. I don't know if he's on scholarship or not, but he came in from Christchurch last year. So 8 of the 14 are in their first or second season. So over half of these players and a lot of guys are going to be counting on this year. But 9 of the 14 were blue chip recruits out of high school, 4 stars or higher. So the vaunted blue chip ratio in the room is skewing at over 50%. And one of those guys that wasn't a 4-star is Jaden Sellers, who, as I said earlier, was probably the most consistent receiver and playmaker during the back half of 2025. So they're in pretty good shape, as far as potential, but it's all potential till it happens. In this offense, you're going to see a lot of 3-wide, 4-wide, what they call 10 personnel, 1 back, 0 tight ends. They're going to spread the field. There's opportunity. Whereas there was just probably more limited opportunity to refer receivers last year within the offense than probably maybe any other team in the SEC at receiver. There's probably going to skew that more towards more because the idea is to go fast. The idea is to, track meet, basketball on turf, sometimes they call it. It's not that this offense is pass happy and doesn't run the ball. They do, but they will, they're going to throw it and they're going to try to get the ball in the hands of these guys. And so this is a big year. It's time to shine. It's time to shine for this group that we've heard a lot about because the restrictor plate's been taken off. Now, before we get into the personnel, I'll admit Lenore Sellers has to do it. Quarterback's important in all this, the most important, because if you can't get them the ball, it doesn't matter, as we saw at times last season. So that's a different discussion, though. We're just talking receivers today, and it's the fact that it's their time to shine. So, of that group that came in as freshmen last year, the much ballyhooed class, some redshirted, some played. Brian Rowe played, he's out. So he's on the West Coast with Bob Chaney and UCLA. Bob Chesney. Bob Chesney. Bob Chaney. The guy from James Madison. Anyway. So who's left out of that group? Well, Donovan Murph and Jaden Sellers are the first two that come to mind. Murph had his moments last year, especially in certain games. Coastal called his first game. I think he made some plays against Alabama. He's a good player. To be a guy that came in early. And as far and he got there over the summer, but came in early from high school, was physically ready to go compete. I think that he had a better year or as good a year as could be expected considering everything. Would it have been great if Carolina's offense was really good and he caught 20, 30 passes? Yeah, great. That would have been super. But I think that there's a lot of promise with Donovan Murph still. And that his production could really go up. I mean, he's a guy that is good with his hands, good with body control, can run after the catch. He's strong. He can block on the edge. Just an all-around good football player with that has, his best days are obviously ahead of him from a playmaking standpoint. And then Jaden, I don't think we thought about Jaden a whole lot first half of the year. Then all of a sudden he's in the game and making plays and. Here's the thing about Jaden that I like. When Lenore Sellers was struggling last year, and I think of the Alabama game in the 4th and 12, that was probably Jaden's best play. Well, the touchdown on the first play of the game against Coastal was pretty impressive. But Lenore, we think sometimes about football players in terms of what we think as fans and analysts, and it almost gets robotic and programmatic, but there's a human element. There's a human element. I think Lenore Sellers is beyond comfortable finding his brother because they've played together for so long. I think when we talk about Lenore Sellers trusting, obviously you're going to trust your brother. And so I think there was chemistry there that was pretty obvious towards the second half of the season. And I think Jaden is a guy that, he goes 100 miles an hour, loves football, was a great high school player in his own right. And if he can keep it going in this offense, he can do some real damage. And he's the guy that kind of, when you talk about losing Brian Rowe, I mean, I don't know that Pup is going to be a guy that you're going to look at and watch him, 45-inch vertical, 40, 41, 42-inch vertical leap and things like that. Brian Rowe is a special athlete, but Jaden Sellers is a special football player. And that's the bottom line. I mean, he's a guy that it's all about production, right? We can talk about upside and potential and projection, but if you produce, you're going to the front of the line. And I think Jaden Sellers is the other rising sophomore, because he played last year, to look at. So the other guys in the group, redshirted, if I'm not mistaken, Lex Cyrus from Pennsylvania. The thing about Lex, and I'm, is he's very, very fast. He's also a great athlete. He had 40-inch vertical during workouts. Guys like this with this skill set are pretty lethal in this type of offensive system. Just about anybody with a good skill set is, just because Kendall Briles and this offense is just so good at, well, okay, some offenses you're like, well, he's a shorter slot guy, so we're just going to run slot plays for him and within the scheme. If we can't get him the ball in that manner, maybe he's the third option, whatever. In this one, it's like, okay, how do we get him the ball? All right, well, let's go do that. And I don't know if Lex Cyrus is going to start play. I'm assuming he'll play more. He's real fast. I think down the road, maybe, Vakari Swain, he'll be in his fourth year this year. So 2027, Lex Cyrus could very easily be the punt returner, in my opinion. I think that's the kind of skill set he's got. He runs like he's shot out of a cannon. A Central Pennsylvania kid that they beat Penn State for. And we talked about him the other day on the show, Lex Cyrus. So that's a guy to be excited about. I tell you, a player to be super excited about. And again, he's very young. He's one of those. He was even younger than Murph, because Jordan Gidron not only came in as an early enrollee, he got here for bowl practice in December of 24. 1 year removed from being a sophomore in high school. So he got here like a year and a half early. The physical transformation he made from the time he got to Carolina to preseason last year was crazy good. He's about 6'2 and a half. He's 195 pounds. He can fly. Guys like this do well in offenses like this. Will it be his time this year? I wouldn't count it out, because he's really, really good. But you can say that for a lot of these guys. Taller receivers, bigger receivers that can run are pretty much that's kind of the prototype these days. So don't, we forget about him because he came in early, and I think it was automatically assumed he was going to redshirt. But my understanding is he's had some really good moments in practice, and this guy's going to be really good down the road. One contact I spoke with, that's kind of outside the program, but talks to some folks over there, said that there was talk that he may be the best one when all is said and done. Sometimes at receiver, there's not like a long development most of the time when you talk about this position. It's sort of like, like on an offensive line, you're like, well, by their third year. But with this kid, he's still young, just like they all are. But so there's that there. Malik Clark played some last year, but still got the red shirt. Malik's one of the guys that has kind of a different skill set, good body control, can go up and get it. We'll see what happens with him this year, but another year of work and developing within, the new system. Another guy that you can't really rule out. So those three redshirted, and then Murph and Jaden Sellers played of the remaining of the Super Six that came in last year. I mentioned Mazio Bennett earlier. I didn't, there was no direct word that he was going to get in the portal, but if you kind of looked at who would get in the portal, there's a guy that caught 30 passes and led the team in receptions the year as a true freshman, and then just kind of disappears and doesn't play. Now, did he disappear and not play, or did he just never get the ball because of the offense? Who knows? And when he did get the ball, he just didn't seem. I don't want to say he looked like slower and worse, and didn't seem as confident. How about that? Didn't seem as confident, and didn't seem like in the games he had taken a step forward. Now, in spring practice last year, everybody I talked to and who saw him play thought he was. I had him on my breakout list. That shows what I know. I thought he was going to be like more than solid, but just didn't happen. But he's sticking with the program. You know, Greenville High School player, 4-star guy. So can he have a redemption this coming season? Can he get to the point where he's back out there making tough catches and making plays, which is the type of player he is? So we'll see. I think, again, the new offense is a godsend for a lot of these guys. So you have Mazio coming back, and then we get to Nick Harbor, among the other guys that have been here that aren't new. And, you know, Nick, every year, and I've been the king of lower expectations for him. You know, I've said, because he's so raw at the position coming in, but he's such a great athlete, it may take some time. And this sounds weird because I just said, well, the receivers, sometimes you don't take a long time to develop. Well, with guys like him, you do. Xavier Leggett was an example of that, too. And we can only hope that he has the type of final year that Xavier had. I don't know about 70-plus pass catches. If in this system, if you have a guy catching 70, and you know, then you probably have a guy catching 50. You're probably going up and down the field pretty good. But I think every time Nick Harbor plays a season, he gets a little better. And what I like about it is the first job he had was catch the ball. I'm not saying he's never had drops. I'm not debating if the natural hands thing. I think the people that say he doesn't have natural hands have a point, but he does catch it most of the time. He has less drops than people that do have natural hands. Less drops than back in the Muschamp era, Edwards, Debo. Shai Smith didn't drop very many. Josh Van led the SEC in drops one year. All those guys have natural hands. Nick, very few drops compared to those cats. I can think of one or two he'd probably like to have back. First play against Ole Miss and Oxford, probably like to have that one back. But the offense ended up getting to the point where the best play was to throw it to Harbor and let him run past the secondary. Now, that's good because they didn't do that a whole lot in 24 or 23. You know, so that he added that to his arsenal, and it worked a lot. I mean, he led the SEC in yards per catch. And then the play that I've always talked about warms my heart. It seems like every year down the stretch in the final, for the past 2 years in the final SEC game, Nick Harbor does something that I've been wanting to see. Against Missouri in 24, he caught the fade pattern for the big play. And then, you know, they caught him in the corner blitz and he caught a touchdown down the side. I was like, wow, that's good. Nick's getting open deep. That's good. Because before, he's just kind of a crossing pattern guy. Because he caught the ball, but the football speed and stuff wasn't there. So that was good. And then I've talked about the play against A&M where he caught it and then just turned it upfield and outran the defense. I've been wanting him to do that for a long time. So if he could do more of that and add that to his arsenal, look out. I mean, because he could be a guy that's very, very difficult to stop and catch in the open field. Does he still have work to do? Absolutely. But in this system, too, it's flexible, adaptable, whatever adjective you want to call it. They'll find him a way. They'll find a way to get him the ball. Some of you that want to see him on the jet sweep, that may happen. You never know. It's crazy. So I think everybody's looking forward to a nice year out of Nick. Nick could have gotten drafted. I don't know how high, just because the NFL sit there, you know, the arrogance. Well, we can save him, or we can fix him, or teach him. But he's made that steady progression. So hopefully he has a breakout year. There's a lot of competition in this room, though, and a lot of guys that were freshmen last year that are going to be a lot better this year. But I think the trajectory of Nick Harbor is very, very good. I didn't mention Jackson Rep, except for in the opening, player from Christchurch that maybe a walk-on, maybe a late addition to the class. Keep an eye on him down the street. He's a good player. He's a good player. I don't know about this year, but he is a worthy player to be in the program. So the portal additions, Jaden Gibson is something that they don't have. And you may say, well, JC, Nick Harbor's 6'5". Nick Harbor, one thing we haven't seen out of him, and maybe the just hasn't had the is jumping over people, jumping up, getting the ball, coming down with it. We saw that in the spring game from Malik Clark. South Carolina, if this core receiving room is missing something, because most of these guys can run, they can fly. It's that guy that can go up and get it, and that's the type of receiver Jaden Gibson is, and he has enough speed, and he's had injuries through the years, and I'm aware of the legal situation that was reported and all that, but he's one of those players. Most of the time we've seen this on defense around here, but on offense, that if you could maximize him and get the most out of him, he can really help. He can really help because he's got that potential. Nitro Tuggle is a great name and somebody everybody's excited about. I was productive at Purdue last year. I know Georgia really liked him as a player. He had some kind of off the field things that happened there. He's from Indiana, was a top 100 player. Just a good all around productive receiver that I think, again, they'll find a way to get him the ball. Is he a blinding 4-4 guy? No, but is he a great athlete? Yes. And I think that we're all going to kind of pay attention to Nitro Tuggle because that's the best name. But he's a player that obviously they wanted out of the portal and that they think highly of. DJ Black is very fast. I've always liked DJ Black since he was at Chapman, Spartanburg County guy. Played at Limestone, caught a ton of passes for Mike Furry there, went to UCF. I think he caught 22 balls this year down there for Scott Frost and the Knights. Coming home, he'll compete. Wouldn't surprise me at all to see him get in the rotation. Also another older guy from a leadership standpoint in the room that can help, that's familiar with the position coach. Charlie Mullaly, this was an interesting pickup. He played at Holy Cross, another burner athlete, a good route runner, good hands, 6'1", 195, originally from the state of New York. Coming to South Carolina, keep an eye on him. He's going into his fourth year, so he's an older guy. No stars coming out of high school. Was at Holy Cross and was very productive at times there. And so the portal class to me is just a solidifying thing. Competition is a big deal. All 14 guys aren't going to be able to play, but I think the more competition, the better, and may the best man win. And it's smart from a standpoint of, I mentioned Lex Cyrus, I mentioned Jordan Gettler, I mentioned Malik Clark. Those guys are just going into their second year. Maybe they're ready to go play and compete in the league, maybe they're in the SEC and against Clemson and the other teams on the schedule. Maybe they're not ready to go make a difference. There's a Ellis Johnson said this one time. He's like, there's a difference between a player that can play in the SEC and a player that can make a difference in the SEC. And guys are ready for that at different points in their career. So, you kind of look at it, well, why'd they? Do they not like, I see this reaction sometimes. Well, they must not like the guys they have because they're bringing these portal guys. Well, no, but it's still a room that's skewed very young. Eight of the 14 are just going into their first or second year. And so if I'm going to hit the portal for competition, depth, leadership, those kind of things, I'm going to go with some older guys to balance it out. And that's all there is to it. Plus there's talented guys here. Guys with a chance. DJ Black and Charlie Mullaly were added kind of late, because a lot of the late portal additions were guys from smaller schools and that maybe kind of just popped up. I think the idea sometimes is, well, those are kind of backup plans or just roster fillers or whatever. That's not always true. That's not always true. Now, I don't know that I'm predicting 50 catches for either one of these guys, but I think that they're good. And you always need depth, at receiver and every position on the field. And you never know. Like I said, they're going to compete. I couldn't tell you who the starters were going to be right now. Just in all honesty, I can guess. I can guess Murph Harbor Sellers would be there, right? Probably take some of the first snaps in spring practice, but who knows who's going to start? Bennett could come back, make a comeback this year. Nitro Tuggle, Gibson. I mean, you just never know. I know they're going to get them the ball, though. That's the one good thing. And then there's two freshmen coming in. Don't count Sequel Patterson out. Sequel, before he reclassified, was a top 20 prospect in the 2027 class in the country. He's an electric playmaker, without question. I have somebody asked me the other day if they'd move him to corner. I haven't heard anything about that. He could be an elite corner if he wanted to be, but they recruited him as a receiver, and they normally don't move guys. It kind of they can, this staff is. I mean, gosh, I remember Lou Holtz would move guys within the week. Steve Spurrier sometimes would wait, but then make. And they made good moves. Moving Torrey Gurley from safety to receiver, how much did that help in 2010? So they would wait and do it sometimes. Sometimes they would do it, sometimes they wouldn't. Muschamp, I'm trying to think. Yeah, he'd move some guys. Sometimes Muschamp era, sometimes they'd make moves and it wouldn't, against all logic, it wouldn't work. AJ Turner, not, running back, but then moved a corner and we didn't hear from him, that kind of thing. So that was, that I'm trying to think of the position moves they made. And then this staff does it, sometimes during the offseason they'll do it, but or they'll play a guy like Dakarion Joyner and Luke Doty, different positions, but still quarterbacks, whatever. But I don't think Sequel's moving, and Sequel's young. But don't count him out. He's electric with the ball in his hands. And then Mike Furry's son, Stone Furry. I would have taken Stone Furry as a late addition to my recruiting class once they expanded the scholarships. I would have taken him as a walk-on at any point, and maybe a scholarship guy too. If the numbers weren't like they were at receiver, like a couple more guys that hit the portal, I'd have taken him there. He's a great football player. But he's in, and I don't know how much we'll hear from Stone this year, but we'll hear from him. I can guarantee you that. So that's 14 players. Like I said, nine of them were blue chip recruits out of high school. With this group overall, I think we've had, in 24, everybody was kind of worried, and it was really a season at receiver that was an adventure because of injuries and the different guys had to step up at different times. I can't say that was a great year at receiver. I think the expectation this past season for the group was that it would collectively be better, and it was. It was. Jared Brown wasn't. Mazio Bennett was not. But some of the freshmen, as expected, stepped in and played. Nick Harbor got better, and Jacobs got a lot better. And so, the offense itself, I think, was the issue. And then sometimes Sellers, and sometimes they didn't get open. I mean, I'm not saying they got open every single play. In this offense, though, you've got to have good receivers and you got to have speed. And it's good to have different types of guys and all that happiness. And they do, they have that. But I think the expectations here for this season, no matter who of the 14 are out there playing, need to be a little higher. You need to be a little higher. Like I said, a lot depends on the quarterback, too. But there's going to be a lot of opportunity, and if this group can collectively and individually take a step forward, then I think all this good recruiting they've done is going to start to really pay off on Saturdays. All right, don't forget Paul Menieri on the morning show later today, and Alex Jones on Game with Gamecock Smorgasbord on the show. Sports Talk tonight, streaming 6 to 8. Don't forget, we talked a lot of high schools yesterday. Four Quarter Friday, Matt Smith, Steve Hall coming up at 8:30. It's an hour and a half now. Tomorrow, streaming live on the Chief Sports app, also the YouTube channel. Please go like their YouTube channel. Subscribe to it. It's free. It's at Four Quarter Friday, youtube.com at Four Quarter Friday. If you love high school sports, and boy, I've been getting into it. It's maybe some missing of home with me, but love to hear the talk about the regions and some of the basketball stuff. North Augusta has a really good couple of teams over there, and my Burns Rebels are having good basketball seasons collectively. So check out Four Quarter Friday tomorrow morning, streaming at 8:30. And if you like Carolina baseball, listen to the morning show, Paul Maneri. He should have some pretty interesting answers today. This has been Coffee with JC Sherbert. I'm out. Holla.